Radical love, lavish generosity, extravagant forgiveness, inclusive hospitality, compassionate action, selfless service, a passion for justice, creative nonviolence, simple living. Good day, good people. I'm Robert Farrell. This is Coalesce. Thank you for joining me. Coalesce is grounded in both and thinking, heart wisdom, and listening for the common good arising in dialogue, where we are present to presence. Coalesce provides an opportunity to encounter and discover the multiple perspectives that make our beautiful community. May we see with the eyes of our heart. May we love one another with peace and compassion. May all beings come to know the divine presence within. This is episode 35, Bearing Witness. In this episode, we're going to explore what it means to bear witness to the universal awakening within Christianity and the perennial tradition. I'll begin by talking about orthopraxy, which is right practice, and is usually distinguished from orthodoxy, which is doctrinal correctness. The importance of orthopraxy is reflected in the life of Francis of Assisi, who learned it from Jesus. However, orthopraxy was taught much earlier in world history by much of Buddhism and Hinduism. I'm an interfaith, interspiritual minister, and although my spirituality is grounded in the Christian contemplative tradition, I can also include Buddhism and Hinduism in my wisdom lineage. St. Vincent of Lerin, in the year 434, was the first to define the word Catholic, little c, which we understand to mean universal. His definition, called the Vincentian Canon, was used by scholars for much of the first millennium of Christianity. It became a way to discern the true belief of the Church. Vincent's in-house principle was amazingly simple and clear, and yet almost shockingly impossible. Quote, "Now in the Church itself we take the greatest care to hold that which has been believed everywhere, always and by all. That is truly and properly Catholic, as it is shown by the very force and meaning of the word, which comprehends everything almost universally." End quote. In other words, if it's true, then it has to be true everywhere and all the time, or it's not true. Most of history has been content with cultural truth, denominational truth, national truth, scientific truth, rational truth, factual truth, personal truth, etc. These are all needed and helpful, but the job of true religion is to detach from them, use them in the largest possible synthesis, and find the big truth that is beyond any of these smaller tribal truths. Jesus' metaphor for this big truth, beyond our little truths, was the reign of God, or the kingdom of God. Or we might say, in the light of eternity, or in the final analysis, or in the eyes of God. But these are all ways of moving away from tribal thinking and looking out at life from eyes other than and larger than our own. It's hard work. This larger and constantly recurring wisdom has been called the perennial tradition, or the perennial philosophy. No one group owns this content, but most of us own parts of it. And for me, the goal is to honor and include as many parts as I can so that I can be truly Catholic. We see this same inclusivity in Jesus to an amazing degree, and I see this as the clearest indication that one practices the true religion. A true religion is precisely one that can teach you how to recognize and honor God everywhere, and not just inside your own group symbols. What we see in many of the Eastern religions is not an emphasis upon verbal orthodoxy, but instead an emphasis upon practices and lifestyle that, if you do them, not think about them, but do them, your consciousness will gradually change. We don't think ourselves into a new way of living. We live ourselves into a new way of thinking. At Contemplative Inner Being, we want to emphasize the importance of praxis over theory, of orthopraxy over orthodoxy. We're not saying that theory and orthodoxy are not important. Like Francis of Assisi, we feel that what is ours to do has more to do with our practical engagements and the way we live our daily lives than making verbal assent to this idea or that idea. That's why we use the phrase living in relational wholeness, not thinking in relational wholeness. And much of my work is really trying to help people move heady doctrines and dogmas to the level of actual experience. In the last 50 years, education theory has come to recognize that listening to lectures and reading are among the least effective forms of learning. They are highly passive, individualistic, do not necessarily integrate head with heart or body, but leave both the ego and the shadow self in their well-defended positions, virtually untouched. As long as our ego self is in the driver's seat, nothing really new or challenging is going to happen. Remember, our ego is committed to not changing and is highly defensive by its very nature. And our shadow self entirely relies upon delusion and denial. Only the world of practical relationships expose both of these. The form of education which most changes people in lasting ways has to touch them at a broader level than thinking, broader than the reading mind can do. Some call it integrative education, transformative education, or even lifestyle education. Somehow, we need to engage in hands-on experience, emotional risk-taking, moving outside of our comfort zones with different people than our usual flattering friends. We need some expanded level of spiritual seeing, or nothing really changes at a cellular or emotional level. Within minutes or hours of entertaining a new idea, we quickly return to our old friends, our assured roles, our familiar neural grooves, our ego patterns of response, and we are back to business as usual. It is as if we never read the latest book or listened to the most recent lecture or sermon. It is merely another consumer object which we can now add to our repertoire and resume. Done that, instead of let it be done unto me. Let us take this moment to let it be done unto us. With eyes closed and hands on heart, rest in the silence. Be still for 1 minute. Every viewpoint is a view from one point. The genuinely new or different is always a threat to the small self, unless there is something strong enough to rearrange our worldview, call our assumptions into questions, and also engage our heart and body at the cellular level. We will seldom move to new interior or exterior places. God has a hard time getting us to join Abraham and Sarah in, as it says in Genesis 12:1-2, leaving your country and your family for a new land that I will show you. Yet this is our foundational paradigm for the journey of faith. The Dalai Lama said it well. Every change of mind is first of all a change of heart. And I would add, every change of heart is soon a change of mind. This is the urgently needed work of mature spirituality. My experience as a teacher has led me to this conclusion. Many folks over the years, even very good-willed people, have read and listened to the gospel, yet have actually done very little in terms of lifestyle changes, economic or political rearrangements, or naming their own ego or shadow selves. After all, isn't church about believing ideas to be true or false? Isn't religion about attending services? Most people just listen to my ideas and judge them to be true or false. They either like or dislike them. But thinking about ideas or making judgment about what is moral or immoral seldom leads to a radically new consciousness. Transformative education is not asking you to believe or disbelieve in any doctrines or dogma. Rather, it is challenging you to try this. Then you will know something to be true or false for yourself. So I will continue to encourage you to try something new. Change sides. Move outside your comfort zone. Make some new contacts. Let go of your usual role and attractive self-image. Walk instead of drive. Make a friend from another race or class. Visit new neighborhoods. Go to the jail or to the border. Attend another church service, etc. Then you can live yourself into new ways of thinking, which then seems so right and necessary that you wonder how you could ever thought any other way. Without new experiences, new thinking is difficult and rare. After a new experience, new thinking and behavior comes naturally and even becomes necessary. Jesus, perhaps disappointingly, gives no abstract theory of social justice. Instead, Jesus makes his life a concrete parable about how to live in this world. He demands of his first followers that they be living witnesses to a simple life on the edge of the dominant consciousness. Once you are at the visible center of any group, or once you are at the top of anything, you have too much to prove and too much to protect. Growth or real change is unlikely. You will be a defender of the status quo, which appears to be working for you. Every great spiritual teacher has warned against this complacency. The only free positions in this world are at the bottom and at the edges of things. Everywhere else, there is too much to maintain, an image to promote, and a fear of losing it all, which ends up controlling your whole life. An overly protected life, a life focused on thinking more than experiencing, does not know deeply or broadly. Jesus did not call us to the poor and to the pain or only to be helpful. He called us to be in solidarity with the real and for our own transformation. It is often only after the fact we realize that they helped us in ways we never knew we needed. This is sometimes called reverse mission. The ones we think we are saving end up saving us, and in the process, redefine the very meaning of salvation. Only near the poor, close to the tears of things, as the Roman poet Virgil puts it, in solidarity with suffering, can we understand ourselves, love one another well, imitate Jesus, and live his full gospel. The view from the top of anything is distorted by misperception, illusions, fear of falling, and a radical disconnection from the heart. You cannot risk staying there long. As Thomas Merton put it, people may spend their whole lives climbing the ladder of success only to find, once they reach the top, that the ladder is leaning against the wrong wall. I believe that, in the end, there are really only two cauldrons of transformation, great love and great suffering, and they are indeed cauldrons, big stew pots of warming, boiling, mixing, and flavoring. Our lives of contemplation are a gradual, chosen, and eventual free fall into both of these cauldrons. There is no softer or more honest way to say it. Love and suffering are indeed the ordinary paths of transformation, And contemplative prayer is the best way to sustain the fruits of great love and great suffering over the long haul and into deep time. Otherwise, you invariably narrow down again into business as usual. Let us take this moment to sustain the fruits of great love and great suffering. With eyes closed and hands on heart, rest in the silence, be still for 1 minute. Francis of Assisi is known for saying, "You only know as much as you do." His emphasis on action, practice, and lifestyle was foundational and revolutionary for its time and at the heart of Franciscan alternative orthodoxy. For Francis of Assisi, Jesus became someone to actually imitate and not just to worship. Up to this point, most of Christian spirituality was based in desert asceticism, monastic discipline, theories of prayer, or academic theology, which itself was often founded in correct belief or liturgy, but not in a kind of practical Christianity that could be lived in the streets of the world. Many rightly say that Francis of Assisi emphasized an imitation and love of the humanity of Jesus and not just the worshiping of his divinity. This is a major shift. Those who have analyzed the writings of Francis of Assisi have noted that he uses the word doing rather than understanding at a ratio of 35 times to 1. Heart is used 42 times to 1 use of mind. Love is used 23 times as opposed to 12 uses of truth. Mercy is used 26 times, while intellect is used only 1 time. This is a very new perspective that is clearly different from and an antidote to the verbal argumentative Christianity of his time and from the highly academic theology that would hold sway from then on and that holds sway now. Francis of Assisi took prayer on the road and into the activity of life itself, which is why the Franciscans popularized the portable, small psalter that we still call the Breviaria, or short handbook. Francis of Assisi's approach has been called a performative spirituality, which means that things are only found to be true in the doing of them. At the level of idea, issues can be forever argued about because thinking is invariably dualistic. Francis of Assisi wanted us to know things in almost a cellular and energetic way and not just in our heads. For Francis of Assisi, if Jesus himself was humble and poor, then the pure and simple imitation of Jesus became his life's agenda. In fact, he often did it in almost a slavishly literal way. Francis of Assisi was a fundamentalist not about doctrinal scriptures, but about lifestyle scriptures. For example, take nothing for your journey, eat what is set before you, work for your wages, wear no shoes. This is still revolutionary thinking for most Christians, although for Francis of Assisi, it was the very marrow of the gospel, to use his own phrase. Imitating Jesus is more important than worshiping Jesus. In 2 Corinthians 12:10 says, "When we are weak, we are strong." And this might have been the motto of the early Franciscans. In chapter 9 of his first rule, Francis of Assisi wrote, "They should be glad to live among social outcasts." Biblically, they reflected the primitive and practical Christianity found in the letter of James and the heart-based mysticism of the Eastern Church. Most male Franciscans eventually became clericalized and proper churchmen, but they did not begin that way. The more radical forms of Christianity have never thrived for very long, starting with the Pentecost itself and the first sharing of all things in common, as in Acts 2, 44-45, the desert fathers and mothers, and the early Celtic monastics, continuing through groups like the Waldensians, the Bingines, the Beghards, the Brudenhof, the Amish, and many others, down to the Catholic workers and the St. Egidio community in our time. In the Franciscan emphasis on orthopraxy, simplicity, nonviolence, living among the poor, love of creation, and in our thought, a nonviolent atonement theory, univocity of all being, freedom of consciousness, contemplative prayer, Franciscans found themselves indeed brothers in the minority class and poor daughters on the invisible edge of the church, which is where Francis of Assisi wanted us to be, and surely how he radically lived. It's only in the late 20th and early 21st centuries that we find this alternative orthodoxy again being rediscovered, honored, and recognized as perhaps the more important shape of and witness to orthodoxy itself. As Pope Paul VI said, the world will no longer believe teachers unless they are first of all witnesses. Let us take this moment to reflect on our own orthopraxy. With eyes closed and hands on heart, rest in the silence. Be still for 1 minute. The practice this week is titled Experiencing the Other. We can theorize all day long about theology, politics, and social change, but the rubber meets the road in practice, in actual encounter with real life. Even so, too often our lives are small and circumscribed, structured to protect us from anything uncomfortable or unfamiliar. Perhaps you can try something new. Get out of your comfort zone. Open yourself to experience the other. Here are a few ideas to consider exploring, although given the times that we're in, some of these may be more challenging. Change your usual routine by shopping in a different grocery store, taking a different route home, visiting another church, walking in a new park. Volunteer somewhere you frequent or somewhere you've never been. A library, food bank, animal shelter, thrift store. Try a new physical activity such as Tai Chi, juggling, skateboarding, or even walking backward. Ask a stranger you meet while waiting in line, at a stoplight, or in a Zoom meeting to share their story, to talk about what matters most to them, to name their deepest needs and desires. Really listen. Then share what you learned with someone you know. A consistent contemplative practice can help you stay open and receptive during adventures into the unfamiliar, as well as during periods of ordinariness. If you find yourself afraid, stressed, or defensive, perhaps use the welcoming prayer as a way to be present to your feelings, to observe without becoming attached. Open your heart and mind to find God, the other, in the new person or situation, and in your own compassionate response to the moment. Thank you for being with me, and may this week for you be filled with opportunities to bear witness to the universal awakening within Christianity and the perennial tradition. Blessings to all.